empieza a migrar la gente, Sinaloa, Baja California Sur, Sonora, Baja California Norte, San Quintín.
So, today there are large Mixteca populations in Cuautla, Morelos, and Veracruz and DF. And between 1950 and 1970 is when these communities began to stabilize a bit. But before then, people went to came to know the northern states of Mexico, the Mixteca people, traveling, migrating into Sinaloa, the states of Sinaloa, Sonora, Baja California to the city of Mexicali, and San Quintín to work with the Bracero program is what drew them to be able to work on the farming jobs.
Y cabe mencionar que esta generación que empezó a migrar en los 70 ya tenía un estudio que nada más era de primero, tercero o cuarto de primaria nada más. Los primeros migrantes no sabían leer ni escribir y muy pocos hablaban español. La segunda generación hablaba un poco más de español y vamos a decir que el 40% sabía leer y escribir, nada más como al cuarto año de primaria, y las otras mayorías no hablan la lengua española, solo mixteco. Pero dentro de esta generación que sale en el 70, ya salimos en ese tiempo, yo era muy jovencito, con una idea más clara de cómo nuestros antepasados fueron explotados en el campo, y nosotros también. Eso nos dio valor a organizarnos en México, Distrito Federal, en Sinaloa, en Baja California y California. Es como surge la primera organización del Frente Indígena, que en el principio se llamó Comité Cívico Popular Mixteco.
So, it's important to mention that this 1970 migrating generation had only maybe third or fourth grade education, but most didn't speak Spanish. They only spoke Mixteco and couldn't read or write. The next generation, you can say about 40% could read and write and had a third or fourth grade education. And I think the next generation left with a clearer understanding of our people's past exploitation. And this is once they were in Baja California and Sonora?
California.
Yeah, and California. And this is... So the first Mixteca organization is the Civic Popular Mixteco Committee. And that's when it was born.
Posterior a esto, empezamos a encontrar más hermanos indígenas de Oaxaca, zapotecos, triquis, chatinos, de otros grupos étnicos de Oaxaca. Oaxaca, tenemos 16 diferentes lenguas indígenas, 16 diferentes grupos étnicos, cada quien tiene su lengua. Empezamos a encontrarnos con más y más gente, entonces por estrategia tuvimos que cambiar el nombre a Frente Indígena Binacional. ¿Por qué? Porque aunque estamos en Estados Unidos, todavía un fuerte lazo nos une con nuestro pueblo, lugar de origen. Nosotros estamos aquí, pero mandamos dinero para trabajos del pueblo, para trabajos del tequio, para hacer carretera, para hacer agua potable, para hacer escuelas. Nosotros desde aquí enviamos dinero a nuestras autoridades de origen. ¿Por qué? Porque el gobierno de México no se ha interesado en los pueblos, en las comunidades indígenas, para llevarnos la ciencia, la tecnología, la educación, los servicios básicos, que es la salud, agua potable, electricidad. El gobierno y su grupo de poderosos solo se benefician entre ellos y nos tienen en el aislamiento, marginación a todos los grupos indígenas de México, no nada más de Oaxaca, de todo el sur, centro y norte de México, como es el caso de los compañeros hermanos indígenas de Chihuahua. Por los medios de comunicación sabemos cómo vivimos en nuestras comunidades. Los políticos se acuerdan de nosotros cuando quieren un voto. Si no, de nosotros no se acuerdan. Todos quieren tomarse la foto con nosotros, pero nadie atiende nuestros problemas. Todos los candidatos, todos los partidos sirven un interés que es el poder del rico y no el poder del pobre. A eso se debe que nosotros tuvimos que abandonar nuestros pueblos para buscar mejor vida. A lo que venimos aquí es a producir las tierras con nuestra mano de obra. La gente indígena es muy trabajadora y aunque sabemos que aquí nos explotan, por lo menos el salario de aquí nos alcanza para vestir y alimentar a nuestros hijos y darles lo que nosotros no encontramos en México, educación.
So after this, we began meeting other with other indigenous people, the Triquis, Zapotecos, and other groups in Oaxaca. Oaxaca has 16 different languages and ethnic groups. So with more people, we had to change the name of our organization to Frente Indígena Binacional, which is a binational indigenous front. Though we were in the U.S., you know, we still support our people back home to build schools, to build the infrastructure for basic services such as water. We send money from here to our families. And why? Well, because the Mexican government doesn't care to provide potable water or any other services necessary for survival. It isolates and marginalizes us. And this is not only true for the Mixteca community, but it goes across the board to all indigenous people in Mexico. And the politicians, they only come to us and remember us when it's in their interest, when they want the picture opportunity, never to attend to our problems, only just for the images. And so we had to abandon our lands in search for a way to survive. And although in the U.S. we are also exploited, it's at least with the wage here, we have enough to feed and clothe our families.
Bueno, para no cansarlos tanto, en estos 25 años de lucha en California, nuestra organización tiene presencia en todos los condados agrícolas de California, Valle de San Joaquín, Santa María, Lompoc, Fresno y alguna representación en Oregon y Washington State y todo Baja California, aparte de compañeros y hermanos otomís, purépechas y de otros grupos étnicos que el pasado congreso en Oaxaca nos reunimos y estamos tratando de organizarnos. No para pelear, estamos organizándonos para luchar por nuestra subsistencia, para que los gobiernos de Estados Unidos y de México nos tomen en cuenta. En el Tratado de Libre Comercio, ahí los mexicanos obreros pobres no aparecen, y menos los indígenas. No figuramos en ningún programa de gobierno. Ante esto, el gobierno de Fox hoy en día no hizo ya nada por los grupos indígenas. El gobierno de Estados Unidos, al parecer, hoy en día, con los abusos a migrantes y los mensajes racistas de gobiernos locales y federal, nos anticipa que esta nación podría convertirse en el violador más grandes de los derechos humanos en todo el mundo. ¿Por qué? Por razones que ya saben. Cierra sus fronteras para que la gente se meta en el desierto y se muera. Si en un tiempo quisimos que tiraran el muro de Berlín y lo aplaudimos, ahora resulta que en esta frontera queremos tres muros, una contradicción. Pero en fin, estamos aquí para luchar a medida de nuestras posibilidades, con respeto a las leyes y los gobiernos, pero con la voz, sí, clara y fuerte para que se nos atienda aquí y en México. Gracias por su atención.
So 25 years of struggle in California, our organization is present in all agricultural counties of California, some in Oregon and Washington, and also in Baja California, in addition to the Otomi and Purépecha and other organizations who all meet at the Indigenous Congress in Oaxaca. We do this struggle and organization to survive so that others will finally take us into account. The Indigenous are not, you know, taken into account in any government programs. President Fox in Mexico did nothing for the Indigenous people. The U.S. government today, with its racist policies and politics, make it seem that this nation could be the world's worst human rights violator in the world. Yeah. So, with its closing borders to causing so many deaths. If one wall before was applauded, now we're having three. And we are here to struggle against this government with a clear voice so that we can defend our survival. And thank you very much for your time and for having me here.
Yes. So as you can see, the struggles of Native Americans here, you know, is clearly depicted, you know, there are issues with the Yaquis, the Otomis, and the Mixtecos. You can see the migration, and in some cases with us, it was the forced deportations through 1902, 1910. Half of our people were deported. A lot of our people also crossed the borders when the border was there to be able to get guns and go back and forth, you know, continue the wars. And the Bracero program, which is mentioned by both of the speakers here as well, also impacted our people. So our people ended up going different places. One of them was California. Again, the San Joaquin Valley is one of the most fertile areas. Our people, being agricultural people, a large group of our people are now in the Fresno area. We have a big Yaqui contingency there. There's Yaquis. I've seen them in Minnesota, Chicago, different places, Sacramento. So there's Yaquis all over the place. And because the traditional language was UM, we spoke UM. And because Spanish is one of the dominant languages down there, we spoke Spanish. And because English is the dominant language here, that makes some of our people trilingual. And some of our people that went to the military, then they picked up other languages, like maybe German or Japanese. So some of our people, for being considered back in the early 60s, you know, just to be dumb people and walking around with, they call them dirty people, with walking around with huaraches, our people were highly intelligent, speaking three languages. So we had people who can only speak one language calling us dumb. Go figure, right? So having said that, you know, also I think some of the achievements that our people have made, one of them was Eddie Brown. He was appointed a Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Bureau of Indian Affairs back about maybe 10 years, 15 years ago. And then we have the International Indian Treaty Council. The International Indian Treaty Council is created after Wounded Knee. I don't know how many of you remember Wounded Knee. Any hands? Well, after Wounded Knee, the American Indian Movement created the International Indian Treaty Council so that we could have an international voice to take some of these issues, and this is why it's important that this is taking place now, so that these issues can be presented before the United Nations, where the U.S. in fact has signed in theory but not in practice, so they haven't signed the Treaty of Genocide, which is what we're talking about today, you know, like the panel before us. And the Treaty Council has consultative status 1 and consultative status 2. When our people went there the year after Wounded Knee, they went there and some of our elders had to sleep on the floor. And they didn't mind that because it was so important what was going on there. And they thought they'd be able to talk, and surely they'd want to hear them. But they said no, there was a protocol. So according to the protocol, they had to come back the next year and get recognized to be able to present oral testimony. So that's what the people did. And now we have consultative status too, and one of the first NGOs, non-governmental organizations at the United Nations level, that in fact has started a whirlwind of indigenous working groups people. And that's something that was started here by the American Indian Movement through the International Indian Treaty Council. And the executive director, Eddie Brown, like I said, worked for the BIA at one point. And the executive director for the International Indian Treaty Council is also Yaqui. So those are two positions where Yaquis have taken a big step, you know, at the international level and also at the state level. So our people have made quite a bit of headway in many different ways. And again, you know, we really didn't cross the border. The border crossed us, you know, so when we came here, it was already part of our territory. When we have ceremonies, we have the deer dance, getting back to the cross. Part of our deer dance reenacts the crucifixion, but part of it is the traditional part, which is the part I like and participate in, the deer dance. When we have the deer dance during Easter, the last week is Holy Week, so if you get a chance to be in Arizona, any of those places, you might just want to be there. No pictures, no photographs. They will be taken from you, and you know, if you don't comply, you will get beat up. That's the way we are. So, you know, you are invited, but you know, you have to just follow our protocols. You know, the thing is too that when we're doing this, we have ceremonies all the way, like from the Phoenix area, all the way to Marana, which is north of Tucson, and in Tucson. A couple of two different places in Tucson, and then in the Yaqui Reservation, Nuevo Paspa, all the way down to Rio Yaqui. So at the same time that a ceremony is being taken place in one particular place, it's taking place over a 300-mile region. So our ceremonies, and we're one of the few people that the languages, like I said, we're trilingual in some cases. Our languages, our cultures, customs, and traditions is something they can never take away from us, and they've been practiced, you know, continually. In Arizona, here a lot of the languages have been lost because of the Gold Rush, the Dawes Act, as Martha, you know, specifically pointed out. So a lot of the languages here have been wiped out, except for a few people, a few elders, a few groups. And some of the songs exist, many things still exist, but by and large, in Arizona, the 21 tribes we have there, all the tribes still have their languages. And that's one of the things we try to keep with the kids also, you know, the Project Head Start and what have you. That's part of our way of maintaining who we are, our identity, and preserving that. There's a leader of the Washoe tribes. I'm really happy when he speaks. He's very eloquent. And he says, I speak English today so that my children can be able to speak their language forever.
Wanted to give a few words in order to wrap up and appreciate your tolerance and your interest in our topics. In July 9th, or 10th and 11th of last year, 2004, we had an Indigenous Peoples Symposium in Fresno, California. It was historical in the sense that we had on the Mexican side, we had Yaquis, Otomíes, Mixtecos, Zapotecos, Purépechas, and I'm not certain, but I believe we also had Triquis. On the California, the local natives from the region, local area, we had Chinumni, we had Wokchumnis, Chumash, Monos, and Chukchansis. There was about 100 to 100 people of indigenous descent from both sides of the border over a two-day event. The food was great. One of our agreements that we came out of the symposium was to acknowledge, honor, and respect each other. And of course, all of those are pertinent to each other, you know, for all of us. But the acknowledgement was really much more for the benefit of the Mexican indigenous, because we you know, first of all, we're not welcomed, and so for us to, for California and U.S. Native Americans to acknowledge us as indigenous people is to us a big it's very important to us. Honoring was for the Mexican indigenous peoples to understand that we're on California, and so we would honor the California people, the original inhabitants of these lands. And of course, respect for all, for each other. And I was present in March of this year at the invitation of the Frente Indígena, who changed their name from the Frente Indígena Oaxaqueños. Before, the name was Frente Indígena Oaxaqueños Binacional, and they changed their name to Frente Indígena de Organizaciones Binacional to open the door for more dialogue, not only for groups of indigenous peoples outside of the Oaxaqueños. And we were invited and welcomed and honored at that event in March of this year. And last year, in September of 2004, there was the opening of the Museum of the American Indian. And President Toledo of Peru, who is indigenous himself, did one of the opening speeches where he spoke about any discussions or actions about sustainable developments cannot take place without the inclusion of the indigenous peoples of the world. And we welcome those invitations to tables of discussions about sustainable development, especially in our communities. And with that, I thank you for... And Ricardo gave me a note about the UN. Do you want to give this?
Just to let you know again, of course, we could go on for hours, days, but one of the things I think it's important that's come out of the American Indian Movement, and it created an umbrella at the NGO level for people from Palau, from New Zealand, what they call Aotearoa, from New Zealand. So in fact, some of these things that have taken place have had an impact at the international level. One of our people, when he was speaking at the United Nations, he was talking, and he says, well, doggone it. He goes, I thought, you know, we're almost all killed. He says, because there's only maybe a few million of us left. He says, but when I look to the south, he says, there's still hundreds of millions of us. Right about that time, the ambassador was drinking water, of the U.S. was drinking water, he almost choked on his water. So that's why when you see a sign, we're still here, it's because we're still here. And as a result of this work, you know, for those of you know, I've heard of Rigoberta Menchú, she also was able to get the international arena and the attention of the world community for the work she's doing in Nicaragua because of the International Indian Treaty Council as well. And one of the things, and she got a Nobel Peace Prize. I don't know if you know that. Anybody know that? Yeah. So the one thing I wanted to mention, and this is a note to Martha, is that one of the other things that we did was we tried to get October 12th to be declared International Day of Solidarity with the Indigenous Peoples of the World. And the United Nations did grant that, did have that. So the United Nations International Day of Solidarity with the Indigenous Peoples of the World is every August 9th. That's worldwide. Even though we didn't get it for October 12th, we still think it's significant that we got it. For them, for the world, October 12th didn't mean very much to them. For us here, we wanted to have it on October 12th, but we're happy we got it. So that's part of the work we're trying to do to raise the consciousness of what's going on with Native Americans. A lot of the support we get is from Germany, from Japan, other countries. They give us a lot of support. They recognize what we're trying to do. Some of this is really funny. They go, we thought John Wayne killed you all. You go, so much for movies, right? But they come up to you and go, why aren't you wearing Indian clothes? You go, if I'm Indian, these are my clothes. So anyway, just to wrap it up with a little bit of humor, I just want to let you know we are still here. Oh-ho.
So we have about 20 minutes for questions if people want to ask any questions. But before that, I just want to mention that it's close to 1:30, and you have a flight you want to catch. So thank you so much, Ricardo Tapia.
were explaining to some people that we really had to be on the sidewalk to clear the street.